Hello everyone, welcome to CoreCast, and happy Valentine's Day. Today we have a special Valentine's episode.
Welcome everybody to a brand new exciting episode. Tim was mentioning earlier, special Valentine's Day edition, and just a few logistical things. If you haven't already, do join our Discord channels. You can ask us questions there, and if you're watching this on YouTube, where we do this Tuesdays, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, ask us questions during the episode so we can get to them as well. So I guess, Tim, we thought since this is Valentine's Day, it'd be great to do take a kind of interesting angle on particle physics or physics in general and look at more of like the romantic aspect of it. Because most people talk about numbers and stuff like that. I thought we can talk about particles falling in love and particles that like bond and, pair bond with each other and stuff. And then also discuss the more like, I guess, what particles are maybe meant to be single forever. What particles would you say have like great love stories in your mind?
Yeah. So the thing about particle physics is that we love to study forces. And this is one of the aspects that makes particle physics important. We want to study interactions and things like that. And that's why, in some sense, particle physics is filled with love stories. Just look at the atom, the protons and the electrons, they bond together in a romantic dance, I guess, to create the great matter for, and that's the only reason why we exist in some sort of interesting way. And the atom isn't the only one, right? Like, there are many stories of unifications, similarities, symmetries, and whatnot. So I would say love stories are plentiful. If you use attraction and bonding as a criteria to select out an interesting topic to talk about, then we'll have a huge number of topics. So that's why I think it's a little more interesting to all the singlets out there to think about what about the contrary? Like, what are some particles that, despite their attractive forces, somehow just fall short? Maybe a bit of a human story there.
Yeah. What would you say would be those kinds of particles? Have we talked about them on the show before?
When we talk about these niche topic, and this is kind of one reason why we pick up the loneliest particle, these are more special candidates. And as such, they tend to get overlooked. And these particles, at least the one that we're talking about doing today, they're not fundamental particles. And they're interesting particles. So we definitely haven't talked about them before. So the one that I'm referring to is the magnetic monopole. So why do we give it the title of the loneliest particle? Well, for actually a few reasons, and I guess we'll get into that, right? First of all, how do you qualify for the loneliest candidate? In particle physics, we have many, many particles, but many of these particles are heavy. They are very massive, and as a result, they are unstable. And when a particle is very unstable, they just decay away. So they didn't really get a chance to experience such a loneliness. I would say in real life, you kind of want that particles to be stable, at least, and live long enough to the extent that it sees interesting interactions, but somehow be kind of elusive in some ways to kind of qualify for this category.
Are there any very well-known examples of particles that are like heavy but unstable?
Oh yeah, there are plenty. For example, if you ignore kind of fundamental particles, they are like very heavy nuclei, for example, undergo fission. Mm-hmm. That's probably well known. The less well-known ones are, they have various force carriers, the W and the Z bosons. They're very heavy. They can decay into electrons or muons and neutrinos. These are things we have not described. They're not very familiar to our reader, to our listeners. And there are things like the Higgs boson, probably more people are familiar with, that also only live for a tiny fraction of a second. And also neutrons are also unstable. So yeah, unstable particles are plentiful, fundamental or non-fundamental. But stable ones are not so much, and for good reasons.
I see. If heavy particles are unstable, and most of them we've seen, is it referring to the magnetic monopole that you mentioned that's heavy? We should probably just jump straight into the magnetic monopole. and discuss like what is that, like what, like what, why is it called magnetic monopole? What does monopole even mean?
Yeah, so it's a very curious observation, and if anyone has played with magnets before, and I'm sure many of our listeners have, a magnet always comes with a north and south pole. If you look at like a compass, the needle, it always aligns with the magnetic field. So we can ask the question, well, how come there is always a north and a south pole? And if you try really hard to isolate just a north pole or a south pole, let's say you try to break the magnet in half, you still fail to create a monopole, because as you break it, let's say you break it in the middle part will split into a north and a south pole. And again, you get two magnets that has both north and the south pole, both north and the south pole. So no matter how hard you try to divide your magnets, you kind of will fail.
Right.
And the reason is actually highly mathematical. It's because of the way magnets came to be. So why are magnetic fields produced? Magnetic fields are produced by moving charges, currents. And magnetic field is kind of like the cousin of electric field. And it's through Einstein's theory of relativity, just like how space and time are related by relativity. Electric and magnetic fields are related by sort of not totally the same, but a similar process. From there, that's why you see that magnetic field is fundamentally a product of electric charges in motion. And as a result, magnetic field is produced usually by moving charges, like let's say electrons moving in a loop. And the way it's produced, magnetic field always kind of curls around the current. If it begins somewhere, always end up somewhere. It's always making loops left and right.
Could you say that's related to the way, like you talked about electrons, like moving around in circles, like electron moving around a circle itself is like a loop. So is it because of the geometry of that essential geometry that you get, like magnetic fields are always kind of looping in a certain sense?
Yeah. In some sense, like the mathematics is a little complicated, and more specifically, we call this the curl.
Mm-hmm.
This mathematical operation, you take the curl,
mm-hmm,
of something, and by their very definition, the curl has, it's kind of like a twirl, basically. Mm-hmm. In order to have a twirl, it has to, the beginning and the end kind of has to line up. And as a result, when you have a magnetic monopole, you can think of it as a source. In order to have a monopole-like structure, it has to be a source of magnetic field. That means the magnetic field has to begin somewhere, but it doesn't have to. Doesn't end in the same place. So that's why traditionally monopoles doesn't really exist, you know, to the extent that it works with the equations. Like it doesn't work, right? Because the equation itself that says that magnetic fields are kind of the swirliness, it lies in the swirliness of this electromagnetic objects, and as a result you always end up with having north and south, so you cannot separate them.
Yeah, so I guess, like, I mean, I want to also like help our listeners draw like a better analogy of this. So can you give the analogy in like with electric fields, like what would that look like? Like what is an example of a monopole with an electric field? What's an example of like a dipole with an electric field? Because it's like cousin of their cousins.
Yeah.
There should be like an analogy in some sense.
Yeah, there's some analogy you can get intuitions of. So monopoles for electric fields are everywhere, basically. The electron is a monopole electric field, for electric field, right? So basically it tells you that if you grab an electron, mm-hmm, there's just, you know, electromagnetic forces pooling. Let's say you have a proton, okay? And an electron will feel the attraction from the proton, then it would just go toward it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow this forces, which is really the lines of the electric field, it kind of ends, and it will point toward the proton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your convention, if it's positive or negative charges, right? So that's what a monopole looks like, right? Like the field just ends kind of at the proton. It doesn't go around. There's no circle that goes around, right? So that's what we see in electric fields.
Okay. So, but if I had like the equivalent of like a dipole, but with electric like field itself, that would be like having a positive and a negative charge, like basically like close together, and it would create this field that would like be very circular or loopy, like, right?
That's kind of, sort of like a electric magnet, if that makes sense. If that part makes sense. And you can combine like a north pole and south pole for electric field, and then you can kind of create electric magnet. And these are called dipoles, right? It's used to, I don't know, generate electromagnetic signals in, let's say, in antennas and whatnot, these structure. So we do see that, but it is a little different. A positive and a negative charge together, there's still a beginning of the end of the field, right? You're just kind of artificially saying that, hey, let's say the electric field begins from one particle, ends in another, and then there's another path that loops around. But really, when we look at conventional magnets, there's no beginning and end of this magnetic field. It just goes in circles. There's always a circle. And the circles sometimes go inside the magnet, and it goes through the magnet and out. So these circular structure, just mathematically, it's just impossible for you to cut out, right? If you cut a magnet, the circle will just become smaller.
I see. So I guess, like, taking a step back, how would you like know that there's a monopole? Like, why even postulate this object to begin with? Like, yeah, like, do we know if it exists? How would we know it exists? And like, just kind of what's the significance of it?
So yeah, that's a great question. Like, why even consider the magnetic monopole? Why do we even care? This curiosity I explored by physicists. The equations that we have right now doesn't allow these fields to kind of twist around. But there are many theories, actually, that says that the electromagnetic field, it's not exactly what it seems, right? The electromagnetic field can be seen as some remnant of some other fields that are more fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Those more fundamental fields might have more complicated structure. And as a result, when we see that magnetic field is kind of is forbidden to beginning and end at a certain point, you know, in these theories, the magnetic field can kind of turn into almost like a different dimension. Like the flavor of magnetic field can change, rotate, right? So you can kind of go around this forbidden logic. And as a result, magnetic field will actually be allowed to exist in these theories, right? And so the idea is that you allow your electromagnetic field to kind of phase into a different kind of like a different plane of existence, it rotate into a different flavor of electromagnetic field and come back. But then to do that, it would require quite a bit of energy. So magnetic monopoles, if they were to exist, will tend to have a lot of energy. So they will tend to be very massive. But now you ask the question, well, why do we care? I mean, there are plenty of particles, right? Why magnetic monopoles? Right? The curious thing is that magnetic monopoles, if they were to exist, a lot of times they are stable. Contrary to popular belief that heavier particles tend to decay into one another. And you might scratch your head, be like, well, why the heck would it be stable for such an energetic object? The reason is when it happens, it's kind of like making a knot in the, you know, electromagnetic field itself. When you do that, it's kind of wrapping around, kind of making a knot. It's kind of like a knot in the field that we're creating. And this knot is what we call a topological object. And just kind of imagine if you take a rope, make a knot in it, you can't just undo that knot unless you like rip the whole thing apart. And this characteristic gives it an unusual stability. But then the interesting bit is if it's stable, and this is a new particle, this means that we have a chance to find it. And there is a chance to discover these new particles, and potentially it can reveal to us secrets about our cosmos.
So I want to take a step. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, because that was a little bit. It was a lot to take in about electromagnetic fields going maybe in different dimensions or like being different flavors. Like, what does that mean? Like in layman's terms, like how can I understand? Like, what does it mean? Because when I think of an electromagnetic field, I visualize the textbooks where you have like one oscillating wave that's an electric field, and then you have one oscillating wave that's like perpendicular, that's like a magnetic field going like this, and they're just moving through like the vacuum space. So if I take that analogy of an electromagnetic field, explain to me like what you said first about transforming different flavors.
Yeah, so you can imagine a scenario. Let's imagine we have like two to three types of magnetic field, right?
Okay.
Instead of just one, two to three types.
Okay.
And then you get asked the question, well, how come we experience two to three types of magnetic field, right? And you can maybe the answer is because those magnetic fields, those alternative types of magnetic field, are so high energy that they're not accessible right now. Like it's hard for us to probe it, to excite it, so we don't feel it. They're locked in some ways, right? But it kind of creates this loophole that allows magnetic field to kind of and to kind of allow the structure of a magnetic monopole, right? So what is the block of having a magnetic monopole? It's because, as I mentioned before, the magnetic field has to go in a loop. It cannot begin and it cannot begin or end in a particular location, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But we can go, but imagine I'm following this magnetic field. What could happen is that, let's say I start with magnetic field one, that this is the one that we're familiar with. And as I get closer and closer to the center of the monopole, the magnetic field one turns into magnetic field two or magnetic field three, right? And then it gets converted. And so it would look like magnetic field one ended. But it really didn't. It just kind of turned into a different type of flavor. So in that way, you can kind of bypass this requirement. So at the end, you still have like loops of magnetic field, right? That your mathematical equation still makes sense. But if you don't know that there were extra types of magnetic fields, you wouldn't know. Yeah, it would look like a magnetic monopole. And I don't know if that.
So like, are we talking about like, if like, if I'm like venturing through space, interstellar travel, there's like this, I don't know, this particle or whatever you want to call it, just like mad chilling in space, watching Netflix, whatever. It's this magnetic monopole, and I'm approaching it like, will I see like loops, and then as I get closer to it, it'll transform into something else? Or like, how can it just like, imagine I'm just traveling towards it in a spaceship. Like,
Yeah.
what can I experience?
Yeah, not quite a spaceship. These are super duper tiny, tiny, tiny particles, right?
Okay.
So from a really far away distance, you would see something like the monopole. Be like, oh shoot, like there's a source of magnetic field. And there's only the north or the south pole, but not both, right? And as you're zooming, you'd be like, yeah, let's take a little closer. You get a little closer, you try to follow the magnetic field, be like, I really would like to see where this magnetic field end, right? Because like the math doesn't add up, right? You just get closer, you zoom in further and further and further, you probe it, right? You will see that the magnetic field doesn't quite end there. It just transforms. Like the closer you get, like maybe in the beginning it's like 100% magnetic field type one, the ordinary magnetic field. The closer you get, maybe some part of it becomes, I don't know, like maybe like 99% magnetic field one and 1% other magnetic field too, and as you mix in more and more of the other type, you get more and more energy, right? As you get closer and closer to that particle, you see made up of it. As you zoom in, you see like this twisting and really complicated, sophisticated twisting of these fields coming together, and in such a way that at the end of the day, they still make like loops of magnetic field.
I see. And there's a certain limit that we can go with that process, because as we mentioned on previous episodes, like if you want to zoom in more, you have to throw more energy at whatever you're observing.
Yeah, exactly. And the more you zoom in, you will kind of see more and more structure. You know, like in the beginning, when you're really far away, you're only sampling the low energy, what we call the low energy behavior of the particle, which is just magnetic field. And as you zoom closer and closer and closer, you get to probe more and more the structure. And slowly you start to see that, hey, maybe magnetic field is our magnetic field is made up of multiple types of magnetic field, right? And this will reveal to you, it'll tell you certain things about the makeup, how the forces in our world works. And so that's one of the reasons why, if indeed we see a magnetic monopole, it'll be super exciting. Because that tells us that there's got to be something interesting if we zoom into that particle. There's got to be something new.
Yeah. Two questions now. Like, what, like, leads us to believe that they exist? If they do exist, like, where are they? Like, surely you must have found one by now.
Yeah. Good thinking. So like I said before, like, there are many theories that postulate that the electromagnetic forces is just one manifestation of one grand unified forces. Like, we have the strong force, the weak force, the electromagnetic force. They seem kind of a bit different, right? So it's very natural to think, like, you know, maybe there is only one force. And if that's true, then that means there must be a way to continuously, if we have enough energy, to continuously change the magnetic field into all the other force fields, right? And so there must be a way for there to be, like, undiscovered types of magnetic fields, right, that we have not probed yet. So in many cases in those theories, yeah, magnetic monopoles will exist and they are stable.
I see. So just real quick, so just to make sure I understand this, are you saying, like, because we believe through theoretical reasoning that, like, magnetic fields, electric fields are all part of, like, this one thing, that because electric fields have sources, magnetic fields should also have sources as well, in some sense?
It is not quite.
Again,
like, there's not really a reason for magnetic field to have sources as well. Like, ordinarily, the math doesn't work out. But it's because we believe that magnetic fields, electromagnetic field is part of a grander structure. So there must be different types of magnetic fields that it can slowly transition to if you have enough energy. And because of that, there must be that it makes sense to have these topological knots, these knots in the field. And in many generic theories, they actually exist, although in some theories, they don't exist. But there are many, many examples of toy theories we can come up with that seem realistic and that will create these monopoles. And so that's why back in, you know, when those theories were just discovered, or these toy models were discovered back in the 80s, 70s, whatever, physicists just realized that, oh, this is a plausibility. Let's go look for them. Like, there were a flourish of research. Like, hey, let's go look for monopoles, because they could literally just be laying out there in the cosmos.
Yeah,
it might be coming down the sky, maybe in the outer space that we're experiencing, you know. And people went out and looked for them. So it's an interesting thing theoretically and experimentally.
Right. I'm assuming that the punchline of the story is we haven't found them yet.
Turns out that back in the 80s, at 1982, Professor Blas Caveras from Stanford really went out to look for these particles. And experimentally, one of the key signature of these particles, it's very simple. And if you've ever gone through, like, introductory to physics in high school, college, you know that whenever you shove a magnet to like a loop, if you connect it to electrical cables, you shove a magnet in, a light bulb will lights up. Like, electricity will run through whenever a magnet will pass through some loop, right?
Good.
Okay. Because magnets always comes in north and south pole, if you pass a magnet through a loop fully, you know, one end, it goes in one end, comes out the other end. The current always goes, like, inside the loop. It goes, let's say, clockwise as you enter, and as you exit, it goes counterclockwise. Right? Mm-hmm. So it always goes up and down, and boom, nothing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's the exception for monopole. For the monopole, it only goes up. It doesn't come back down. And also, there are theoretical considerations about monopoles that monopoles only come in particular discrete charges. Just like, you know, like, electrons has negative one charge. Monopoles will only have, like, maybe plus one, negative one monopole charges, or two, three, whatever, right?
Really?
Okay. So we know it's a very distinctive signature. If we have, like a large, let's say a large loop, almost like a capturer, not quite a capturer, but like a device to see if monopoles are flying through from the sky. This is a telltale sign of what a monopole would look like. And it's really unmistakable. Like, you can't, like, you can't really fake it. It's hard to fake.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And Professor Blas Caveras, on 1982, he was running this experiment to look for them. He's got like a large loop. I think it's like a 2 centimeter wide. It's a superconducting loop, so very sensitive equipment. Mm-hmm. He went and waited, and he observed one event on Valentine's Day on 1982. And if you look at the paper, he published it. It's an unmistakable signal from a magnetic monocle, right? Mm-hmm. So all the noises in the lab, it goes up and down, up and down. But just that one day, I don't know, like, say 5 p.m. or whatever, he observed that signal. But and you look at the paper, it's so clean. There was zero current, and it jumped 8 units. Not one, not negative one, not three, not three and a half, not some arbitrary noise, but 8. And that 8 is exactly what you would get from a magnetic monopole. And it just jump up, and it doesn't come back down. It's a superconducting loop. The current stays there for a long time until it slowly decays. And I can't imagine how excited he must have been, right? Like,
yeah.
This is like a Nobel Prize moment if he did discover magnetic monopole. Like, this would have been one of the greatest discovery of the decade, if not like the century, right? Discover magnetic monopole.
Weird.
But and he couldn't explain it any other way. I think they tried to hit it with a hammer or just do all kinds of crazy things to the experimental apparatus. They could not reproduce this. Like, there's and maybe someone play a prank on. But that signal was never reproduced. Oh. They tried better experiment. They tried different experiment. Eventually, the team gave up, and other people gave up on it. And just think of it as a statistical fluke. Right. Mm-hmm. So that event was known as the Valentine's Day monopole.
Right?
So I guess the moral of the story is, well, I don't know what moral of the story there is. But, you know, I don't know what to think. Of course, in physics, people are highly skeptical, careful, right? Like, yeah, one event does not make a discovery. Mm. But still, to this day, we do not know what happened.
Mm.
And there is a small possibility that he did indeed capture one of these lonely wanderers in the universe. Mm. And that would have been like a one in like a million discovery. He got really lucky.
Wow.
But maybe... Or maybe it's a fluke, of course. We, in physics, we always assume that it's some noise, right? Even though I just can't explain it. But there is just this one in a million chance that maybe he did make that discovery, right, that day. But we just unlucky enough to ever reproduce it.
I see. Does this mean magnetic monopoles are also looking for love?
Quite possibly, but this would be a kind of like a terrifying love. And let me explain, because magnetic monopoles are stable, and because they are stable, they could create huge problems for our universe. And that's why we actually would prefer them to be lonely as possible. Because if in the universe we have too many magnetic monopoles, the universe will collapse. There's too much matter. It would just, we would have never formed, right? So in order for us to find love, fortunately, it was required that monopoles would never find each other.
So it's like almost a zero-sum game between us and the monopoles.
Well, kind of. I mean, I don't want to say that they need to be sacrificed for us to exist in a reasonable way. But yeah, but monopoles being such a heavy particle with all the exotic properties, yeah, we don't really like to have lots of them in our universe.
That's fair. All right, so we're almost at time. Is there anything you want to leave our audience with?
I guess, yeah, this is kind of like a interesting love story in particle physics, right? I guess we should always think about some more of our story, right? So I guess this is twofold. Theoretically, magnetic monopoles compels us to kind of think outside of the box a little bit, right? Just because we don't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And if we do indeed discover one of these guys, it will. I mean, I would have no doubt. It's definitely a Nobel Prize. I mean, it will be super exciting for the entire community. But also beyond that, it tells you that also as experimentalists, you know, you should you should never give up. You should just keep trying, because you never know. Maybe today could be your lucky day. You might find something. But also at the same time, if you just find it once, that's not quite enough. So you kind of need to be lucky twice, at least. So,
yeah. Well, on that, I guess that's so you need to find it more than once, like one in a million event more. Than...
Yeah, at the end, you still need to at least find it.
Yeah. All right. On that note, I want to thank you for joining us, and we'll see you all next week.
Yeah, and see you all next week. I guess at the end, yeah. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yes.
You all find your magnetic monopole one way or another. For better or for worse. All right. See you all. Bye.